This is the OANDA podcast.
You're listening to the OANDA Market Insights podcast, talking to OANDA senior market analysts from around the world. And today, it is Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed.
Hello from New York.
Now, let's start with the latest from the markets where you are. The S&P 500 and the Dow hit record highs today after Morgan Stanley wrapped up the quarterly earnings reports from the big US banks with a profit surge. Optimism about a solid economic rebound put all the main indexes on course for weekly gains. And those bank earnings have been good news for investors, haven't they?
Very much so. I think this has been quite the week. We've had tremendous results from the banks. I think that my key takeaway, deal making has been very healthy. You know, we've been talking about SPACs and IPOs the last several months, and that's really been very profitable for these banks. And then and also trading. The trading volatility has remained elevated. Eventually, you're going to see the focus be on loan growth, and I think that's where there is some short-term weakness where some of the banks are voicing some concerns. But overall, the banks provided a very strong picture, and when you take a look at the U.S. economic data, it really impressed. We saw jobless claims fall to a pandemic low. Retail sales, you know, surged back. We obviously that was expected because of the latest wave of stimulus checks were hitting bank accounts. But I think you're seeing broad strength across the U.S. It's being reflected across most indicators, and that's been expected. We have pent-up demand. We have a U.S. consumer that has a lot of them have money that is pent up and waiting to be spent. And I think the outlook for U.S. stocks still is fairly attractive. And market move, though, was really the Treasury markets. You would anticipate all this strong economic data would have sent Treasury yields much higher, but no, we actually had a rather interesting move where the 10-year Treasury yield, that broke below its a very key level, the 160 level, and that kind of triggered a lot of option moves. It really kind of flushed out many bond trades, and I think that now you're in a period where it looks like Treasury yields could start to consolidate. The bond market sell-off has not really returned, and I think that right now still there are a lot of people anticipating just some further pressure here with yields, and if that's the case, that should keep the dollar a little bit vulnerable. So I think everyone is kind of digesting a lot, but I think the big banks, for the most part, we must acknowledge that it was a strong results from Goldman Sachs. They really kind of had the best, I think, earnings season. JP Morgan very strong. I think that I think the common theme was we constantly were saying it was a record quarter for these banks, but I think when you take a look at what is dragging, let's say, Morgan Stanley, who had very strong results. The Archegos family office blow up, that one triggered a $911 million worth of losses for Morgan Stanley. And I think that you're going to see that everyone's going to keep a close eye on these family offices. I think that deleveraging of some of those firms is likely to happen. And you could see that Goldman Sachs was able to quickly handle that. Morgan Stanley struggled. Nomura did. Credit Suisse had issues. So I think you're going to see that there's a little bit of a cleanup that is going to be done. And the regulatory reviews of Archegos, that's going to go on for quite some time. But I think in the end, a very, very strong start to earnings seasons. And that's why we're continuing to push, not significantly, but we're still pushing higher for these record highs.
Ed, you mentioned IPOs earlier, and Coinbase's debut on Wednesday got people pretty excited, valuing the crypto at $100 billion. I mean, that initial valuation put Coinbase ahead of many well-known firms, including the oil giant BP. How can it be that one of the world's biggest oil companies can be superseded by basically a virtual IPO?
It's fascinating. And it goes to show you that the cryptocurrency movement is here, and the amount of interest is still growing. We are constantly getting hedge funds, and some corporate American companies are embracing Bitcoin on their balance sheets. This is a new market, and what we're seeing is that there is just tremendous amount of new investors that are piling in to cryptocurrencies. And what Coinbase has done, it's really a legitimized cryptocurrency trading, and for many people, it's providing this opportunity to easily gain more exposure to cryptos without having to actually hold them. I think one of the biggest reasons why you're starting to see investors are becoming more optimistic about cryptocurrencies is that you've had governments really take an interesting stance on the regulatory aspect. You know, a year ago, or even just, you know, you could go last summer, the fear was that there was one possible, you know, U.S. government headline or press release that could have, you know, signaled the end for Bitcoin. But now the mainstream, the public want Bitcoin, they want cryptocurrencies, and now you're seeing that the regulatory environment is somewhat shifting. And even when we have a day where Turkey announces a banning of some crypto use, specifically with payments, we saw 4% weakness, but really that's nothing what we would used to see. And I think that is becoming much more of an isolated incident. Turkey is trying to control their capital controls. The lira is on the verge of significant weakness. So I think that you're seeing markets are believing that, okay, China is going to have their digital yuan. The ECB is probably 3 or 4 years away from theirs. Sweden noted that they're probably 5 years from their current digital coin. And the Fed is still in an exploratory stage. They're probably going to be the last one to come out with their digital coin. And I think that you're seeing Bitcoin is now still viewed as a store of value. And even if we don't have that mainstream acceptance, or people are not buying or using Bitcoin on daily transactions, that store of value is holding nicely, and the institutional interest is not I think falling off. And that's one thing that is very important to this, and that's why you're probably going to see that you know, Bitcoin, you know, it's above 60,000. You know, it's definitely off its highs, but I think you're going to see the base case for Bitcoin to continue to rally to possibly 70,000 in the coming weeks is probably likely, because there's still tremendous interest. But despite, you know, all this this optimism, the successful IPO of or trading debut of Coinbase, what you're going to see is that there has been not just the move higher in Bitcoin, but it's been with the altcoins. Ethereum is pushing record highs, but we are seeing a very interesting development with Dogecoin, which I think we once talked about it. Dogecoin is one of the more interesting cryptocurrencies, because this one was, you know, predominantly it was supposed to be a joke. I think that no one really took Dogecoin seriously, but then you had Elon Musk, who was a strong supporter of Dogecoin, supporting the notion that it was going to go to the moon. And what you saw was Elon Musk, he has been advocating for you know, people to be interested in Dogecoin. Has a use case, but it's not been realized yet. And I think what you're probably going to see is that investors, you know, strictly, you know, are viewing Dogecoin as just a bubble right now. And it's rallied, I think, over 500% in the last 7 days. It is, you know, I think people were not expecting it to go above 10 cents, and now it's knocking on the door at 40 cents. And I think what you're going to see is that the interest in Dogecoin is mostly retail, and it is fascinating to see how this is keeps on skyrocketing. And the risk, I think, for Dogecoin is extremely elevated here. I think this is, you know, we've had, you know, significant moves higher for Bitcoin, but you know what we're seeing right now with Dogecoin is really something unique. And I think what you're probably going to see is that if Dogecoin you know, keeps this pace up, it is going to lure in a lot more retail investors. And I think sadly though, there's only one way this is going to end, and it's not going to be pretty. I'd like to point out, if you invested $1,000 in Dogecoin on January 1st, you know, you'd be holding about $55,000 right now.
Why didn't you tell me, Ed? Come on.
That type of coverage and, you know, I think the viralness of that move is really seeing a lot of people say, well, if it's already almost, if it's going to hit 50 cents, why won't it hit a dollar? This hysteria is just growing. And you know, the fundamentals do not support this. The argument for cryptos is there. Ethereum has, you know, is behind several, you know, usages. And I think that, you know, Dogecoin is not really, it does not seem justified. So I think this is going to end ugly for many traders. But it is something you can trade off of on Coinbase. It is providing more excitement. And it's interesting to see how this cryptocurrency world is evolving. But I think, you know, regulatory concerns are going to become, I think, more noticeable, especially when you have a bubble-like situation with Dogecoin.
Yeah, and it's timing, isn't it? When Bitcoin prices crash, business falls. As Bitcoin's prices increase, so has the volume of trading, the transaction fees collected, the valuation. And between its last private fundraising, which was around in late 2018, and the price when the stock opened on Wednesday, Coinbase's valuation has grown by 1,000%.
I think right now you're going to see, too, the environment. I mean, what we're going to see Coinbase go through is what TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab did with Reddit. You're going to see other exchanges come aboard. And I think, you know, the Kraken IPO is not too far away, I bet. And the fees are really high right now. That is going to, I think, you know, start to fade as the competition increases. Everyone wants a part of this crypto mania right now. And right now it seems like it's just going to get a lot harder for Coinbase. And I think that right now, you know, the IPO has been successful because we're still trading above the reserve prices. But I think right now everyone is kind of just waiting to see exactly, you know, how this unfolds. And there's so much risk right now with everything crypto. But I think right now the more sound investment right now, believe it or not, is still Bitcoin.
Let's move on, Ed. How have markets been affected by the news that the Johnson & Johnson COVID jab may cause rare blood clotting? 6 cases detected in more than 6.8 million doses of the vaccine. That's from the US Food and Drug Administration. Johnson & Johnson has had to pause its EU rollout, which started this week. But those odds, 1 in a million, are pretty good. I'd take that any day.
Yeah, and I think health experts, they're for the most part, you know, pointing out that, well, you know, the risks of actually getting COVID, if you do have COVID, you know, the chances are you're going to have a higher percentage chance of having some bad side effect,
like a blood clot.
Which is one of them. I think what really kind of disrupted the optimism that you know, I think initially the health experts, even Dr. Fauci, I think everyone was kind of talking about how this should be resolved in a matter of days. But then, you know, when the CDC panel met, they said, well, we're concluding without a vote. They're just going to extend the pause. And the problem is that the J&J vaccine was, you know, for the U.S., it was really not really needed. We have a tremendous amount of supply with Moderna and Pfizer. We're we're on pace to reach herd immunity by the end of May. So it seems that the J&J was really being targeted for universities to just kind of do the one-off and just get that taken care of. But I think right now, the biggest risk was that emerging markets, a lot of the countries that have been struggling to get their hand on vaccines, Europe included, they were counting on this one. And now that things are getting slowed down, this is just derailing the recovery, I think, abroad. And I think it is... important for, the scientists and doctors to, just abundance of caution to make sure they know everything about the virus and the how these vaccines are working and what are the side effects. But I think there's, still a strong belief that this vaccine is, going to still have the green light. Maybe they'll have some restrictions against maybe women taking it, or maybe people who are using birth control. There's still lots of reviews going on, but I think you're probably going to see that in the end that this vaccine is still going to be used, just like the AstraZeneca one is. But I think what the big concern is vaccine hesitancy. Will this really make a little bit people more hesitant in getting vaccinated? I know when I got my jab, I had no idea which vaccine I was getting. I was going to the NYU Langone facility in downtown New York, and I knew it was either going to be, at that time, J&J, Pfizer, or Moderna. And I think, the belief really for a lot of people is they're still confident in all three vaccines. Obviously, I think there's a preference for Pfizer and Moderna now. But I think that, the world is slowly getting COVID under control. Europe is seeing vaccinations finally increase at a better pace. And I think there's a good reason to be optimistic going forward.
Let's move on to China. And we had some figures today. Their economy growing a record 18.3% in the first quarter of this year compared to the same quarter last year. Obviously, these figures are somewhat skewed by COVID. It's the biggest jump in GDP since China started keeping quarterly records way back in 92. However, those figures are actually below expectations, with a poll I saw from Reuters, with economists predicting 19% growth. So were markets a tad disappointed?
I think when you take a look at, all the data, because yes, the GDP, that, headline grabbing 18.3%, and obviously it's going to just continually to trend lower. But I think there was some disappointment with the miss that we saw with industrial production. There was a slight beat with retail sales, and that was actually very positive. I think the domestic outlook has lagged in China, and I think what we saw was that retail sales remained very strong, and that's very positive. I mean, we saw L'Oreal, we saw Mercedes-Benz really benefit off those strong readings, and I think what you're probably going to see is that this supports the argument that the PBOC earlier in the week was starting to tighten liquidity. This kind of just, I think, makes a good case that, China is going to still remain accommodative. We're still too early in this recovery, even though, China's recovery has been going since, the second quarter of last year. But I think you're going to still see that investors are still going to like Chinese assets. I think that there's just a tremendous growth here still. I mean, eventually China might end up, growing by 8 or 9% this year, but I think that's still providing a lot of opportunity for investors. And I think there's lots of ways to look at the infrastructure, the industrial output, miss. But I think that you're still going to see that, any expectations that the PBOC was going to start to pull more support away from the recovery, I think that's just going to get pushed back. So I think I'm still optimistic on Asia and specifically China.
Okay, Ed, before I let you go, I'd just like to look ahead to the next week or so. What are the highlight moments that you'll be looking out for over the next 7 days?
It's a busy week. there's a lot going on. I think, you know, we normally don't talk about Canada, just for time purposes, but I think it's a big week for Canada. On Monday, Prime Minister Trudeau releases his budget. This is the first budget in 2 years, and I think what a lot of people are going to see is this is kind of also his election campaign, but it's going to be key to see exactly how the economy is going to be positioned going forward. And then also for Canada, this is a very big rate decision week for them. I think the Bank of Canada has been telegraphing that, you know, it's time to taper its weekly bond purchases. And so whenever you hear the word tapering, that is going to draw a tremendous amount of tension. I think that's going to be a very big event. And that happens on Wednesday. So those are the two big ones for Canada. Not going the proper order, but on Tuesday, you know, we do have two big tech events. We have Apple's spring-loaded event. Apple, because of its weighting on the S&P, it's just very important to track, you know, new iPad Pro, AirTags. There's going to be a new Mac possibly announced. If Apple continues to provide excitement for holding shares, I think that's going to just, you know, continue to keep, you know, sending the NASDAQ higher up. Netflix also reports. They're the first FANG stock to report. That's after the close. On Thursday, we have the ECB. Thursday, no change is expected in policy, but they're probably going to affirm that, you know, the asset purchases will run at a faster clip until June. Also, from the Eurozone, we'll have the advanced reading for consumer confidence. That is expected to weaken a little bit, so it'll be interesting to see if that somewhat changes. And then with the U.S., there is a wrath of data. Thursday, we have initial jobless claims. We have existing home sales, which is supposed to remain steady. I think the housing market's been the best sector in the U.S., and we're going to probably start to see a little bit of slowness, I think. There's been a mass exodus of the big cities, but I think a lot of people are starting to come back. Home sales could start to finally slow. So that's going to be important to track. And then also on Friday, we have the flash PMI readings. That's always watched. I think in the U.S., we're expecting, you know, continued improvements on both the manufacturing and service sectors. Germany is also anticipating you know, strong expansionary readings, and I think we'll also get that from the UK as well, and also in the UK we'll get retail sales as well. So lots of data, but I think most of it should be rather supportive that, you know, this global economic recovery is taking hold.
Okay, Ed, thanks for joining us today, and have a very good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
CO Ander Podcast.